It's Thursday, the 25th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Joachim Noah, Mario Hezonja, and Jimmy Fredette. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Gibson J55. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Gibson J55 and sponsor an episode of the podcast, not today's because Gibson's got that in the bag already, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the podcast. And thank you to all 550 plus people who have left reviews. That is a fantastic, it's a staggering amount, to be honest, of reviews. And if you've got a couple of spare 5 minutes across the next couple of days, I'd really appreciate if you could do that. Let's bring this season home with a real bang, get some new listeners on board, jump up the iTunes rankings. It helps more than I can express. iTunes doesn't exactly tell us how they do their rankings, but whenever you get lots of reviews and new listeners and downloads, it jumps up pretty significantly. So if you could do that, it would be awesome. We have got a lot to talk about. 10 games Wednesday, 5 games Thursday. So
let's get to it.
Cool. The Wednesday contests on Instagram and Facebook, we had winners on both. And Instagram, we were looking for how many combined rebounds and blocks will Miles Turner get? He got 6, didn't get any blocks, 6 boards, and we had a winner, and that was Mover and Shaker 21. So congratulations to Mover and Shaker 21. If you want to be in the daily Instagram contests, follow me at redrock_bball over there, and on Facebook, which is facebook.com/redrockbasketball, we were looking at Vince Carter. How many points will Vince Carter score? The correct answer was 9, and 2 people got that correct, Jason Gunnison and Tomasi Tulia. So big shout out to those guys for getting it right. So Mover and Shaker 21, Jason Gunnison and Tomasi Tulia, you guys all get a big shout out and congratulations for guessing that correctly. For Thursday on Instagram, we're going to be looking at Jabari Parker, how many combined points and rebounds. And on Facebook, we're going to be looking at Shelvin Mack now with the Utah Jazz, how many combined points and assists will Mack get? Very straightforward. Go and enter on there. Type your answer once the post goes up. Tag your mates. Join in all the great discussion that happens over on that Facebook page. And yeah, enjoy. Let's talk monstrous line of the night, though. And I really should have kept track of all this, of how many times I've given certain player the monstrous line of the night. I reckon Steph Curry's had it quite a few times, and he gets it yet again. The Warriors were in a bit of trouble against the Heat. I think that's fair to say, but Steph was magnificent in the last quarter, hitting those two massive long-range threes. He finished with 42 points, including 6 triples. Also had 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He went 14 of 29 from the field. He hit all 8 of his free throws. There's nothing much more I need to say about Steph Curry. He's the clear number one player. 30 points, 5 triples a game, 6.5 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, 51 and 91. There is nobody coming close to touching those sort of numbers. He is putting up magnificent, magnificent value. He's shooting 46% from 3. You talk about the 50-40-90 club. He is smashing that. He's currently in it at 51-46-91, and that 46 is absolutely incredible. So Steph Curry, we know how good he is, and just a quick almost, you know, weekly reminder when he gathers himself a weekly monstrous line of the night award. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Matt Barnes of the Memphis Grizzlies. He's a guy that I've been championing for majority of the season, especially since the trades of Courtney Lee and Jeff Green. He's had a few stinkers since then, definitely. Now, most of it's coming on bad shooting, and I was preaching, stay the course. I think he should be owned. This is why he should be owned. Now, he's not going to do this all the time because he's playing, let's be honest, a team that that Melbourne United would give a run for their money. Against the Lakers, Barnes had 25 points and went 9 for 14. He hit 5 triples, had 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. A big, big game from Barnes. He's owned in 35% of leagues. He's a top 100 player for the season. I don't know why he's owned in so few leagues. Yes, he can be inconsistent, but especially if you're playing in a rotisserie format, inconsistency doesn't matter. It's the net aggregate of what you do. And he's a top 100 player. He's only averaging 9 points, so that's what drags him down. But 1.5 threes, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, almost a block, 82% from the line. The 40 from the field is not ideal, but he's been really good. And I think that he's only going to get better over these last 2 months of the season as they lost those two guys out of their rotation and only replaced them with PJ Hairston and Lance Stevenson, who aren't the same caliber. So Barnes should be locked in at 30 plus minutes for most of these games. There'll be nights when his shot doesn't fall, but he helps in so many other areas. He is a real triple one threat. He could average a triple one this season. He's averaging it over his last three at 2 triples, a steal, and 1.3 blocks. So I do urge you to have a look and see if you can fit Matt Barnes onto your roster. The young gun of the night comes from the same game, from the other side of the bench, wherever, however you want to call it, the other locker room. Jordan Clarkson of the Los Angeles Lakers played 41 minutes. He led all scorers with 28 points. He hit 6 triples, had 6 rebounds and 3 assists on 10 of 18 shooting. Now, Clarkson had a fairly slow start to the season, but he is motoring at the moment. He's a top 60 player over the last week. In his last 4 games, he's a top 25 player. He's averaging in those last 4, 21 points, 4 triples, 5.5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.3 steals. The 4 triples feels extraordinarily fluky, and that's because he's shooting them at 59%. That will not continue. It just won't. He's not a 59% three-point shooter. That will drop off. He shot 31% from 3 last year. He's up to 38 this year, which is obviously a huge increase. And his shooting is better. And one of his biggest pluses as a fantasy asset is as a point guard or shooting guard now, his field goal percentage is pretty decent. He's at 45 this year, but over the last month, he's at 49. That is incredibly high. And he is really turning on. He is going to be a serious player once Kobe leaves. D'Angelo Russell's still got a bit to learn, but Clarkson is going to be a very, very nice shooting guard. If you can be a shooting guard who's shooting 49% and contributing in triples as well, it's going to be interesting. Now, I said that the 4 a game he's shooting over the last week is not sustainable, but over the last month, he's shooting 2.2 a game at 52% for a month in 13 games worth. That is an extended hot streak. Again, I don't think he's a 52% three-point shooter. Steph Curry isn't a 52% three-point shooter. But there's been definite improvements in that area. You'd have to think that he's going to be close to a 40-point guy by the time of the season's done. He's at 38 at the moment. He's at 42 over the last 2 months and really, really improving what he's been able to do. He was available on waiver wires at the start of the season, putting up some fantastic numbers at the moment, and really hard for him to approach what he did in the second half of last year with Kobe around, but somehow he's doing it and growing into becoming a tremendous player. One of the top 10 players from last year's draft. I might even go higher. I'd have to really narrow it down and have a look if I'm giving players value from that draft. But I'd say almost definitely he's definitely a top 10 player from last year's draft. Now, I talked about Matt Barnes not being owned in leagues. If you own Tim Duncan, you can probably drop him and go and add Matt Barnes. Duncan played, he's the dart of the night, by the way. He played 12 minutes and had 0 points. He had 2 rebounds and no other stats. Tim Duncan is owned in 89% of leagues. That is a lot. He shouldn't be owned in 12-team leagues, in 10-team leagues. 14-team leagues is a bit of a struggle as well. He's averaging only 19 minutes in the last month. It's only 5 games, but 5.6 rebounds, 1.4 blocks on 26% shooting. That is killing you. Now, he's not a 26% shooter. He's going to improve that and his numbers are going to look better, but I don't think that he comes back and becomes a top 100 player again. He is a top 100 player on the season, but for now, I would rather grab someone else, stream the spot, get some more consistency from that spot rather than own Duncan and have the 18-minute nights and the 12-minute nights and the 21-minute nights. For now, I would rather leave him alone. If for some reason he plays 26 minutes and goes for 14 and 10 and has 2 blocks and you miss out, you go, oh well, that's 1 game. And what about all the other bullshit that happened before that? Much rather move him to the waiver wire and grab a guy like Matt Barnes. There is almost no situation that I would prefer Duncan over Barnes at this point in the season. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup for Wednesday's games. That's the wrong one. Sneak peek. There we go. Steph Curry had 59.9. I talked about him a fair bit yesterday, saying that there's always a risk associated with him, but he's relatively matchup proof. But in a tournament, feel free to go and use him, and it worked out beautifully. D'Angelo Russell was good as well, 37.8 for the Lakers. Dwayne Wade put up 46.1. he'd been really subpar recently, so that was a bit of a stab in the dark. And Clay Thompson had 43.6. That one you could make sense of. At small forward, Marcus Morris had one of his best games of the season against the Sixers, 34.8. And Matt Barnes with 39.6. We've touched on him already. Taj Gibson had a career high in assists with Derrick Rose out, so he got a bit of an increase there, 38.9, while Dirk went for 42 against the Thunder. And Hassan Whiteside finds himself again in the perfect DFS lineup, going for 40.6. Overall, looking at that lineup, there's a lot of ones where I can look at and go, yeah, I didn't expect that to happen. You know, I look at guys like Wade, Morris, Gibson, Nowitzki. Those guys never really appealed to me as awesome DFS options. A few of them do, like Curry, Thompson, Barnes, Whiteside, all of those guys stood out, but the others, not so much. So, my tournament lineup wouldn't have looked anything like that, and that happens on some nights. But overall, I think that we touched on majority of those players in yesterday's program. All right, we are going to get into looking at these 10 games box score wise. Now, I'm going to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to look at these 10 games in more detail. All right, guys, we are back in business. Let's get into these games and get through them. The first one is the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. Well, all that talk of perhaps Jose Calderon going to the bench and Jose Calderon being limited seems like it's a load of shit, to be honest, because Calderon played 33 minutes and had 20 points with 4 triples, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. And the guys who were supposedly starting to take that role, Langston Galloway and Jerian Grant, Galloway was good. He played 29 minutes. Grant didn't play at all, which is just a ridiculous move on Kurt Rambis's part. He will have lots of ridiculous moves this season. That's one of them. Don't play Sasa Vujicic 11 minutes and Jerian Grant none at all. Calderon, I don't think you can really own him in 12-team leagues. I'd say the same thing for Galloway and Grant, even though they all had big nights here. Not Grant, Galloway and Calderon. Galloway went 17-6-4 with 3 triples, but it's really tough for me to hold him in a 12-team league. Kristaps, he played 36 minutes and had 22 points, 2 triples, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals and a block. So an exceptionally full line from Kristaps. And he's still continuing to put up numbers. There's going to be nights when he struggles, definitely, but not tonight. Aaron Aflalo, very Aaron Aflalo-y. 24 minutes, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists on 1 of 6 shooting. Own him if you want. There is no chance that I own him in any standard leagues. And Mallow had an off night. He was 5 of 20 from the field for 14 points, 7 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and a 3. So still helped in some other areas, but that's a real downgrade when you get those sort of that sort of shooting percentage. Lance Thomas, who looked like he was sort of out of favor with Kurt Rambis, played 32 minutes here. That's whopping. 5 points with 4 assists. He's not ownable outside of deep formats. And Derek Williams did not see the court at all, which I think is a strange move. We got a cock explosion. Kylo Quinn played 16 minutes and had 19 points, including 2 triples, 6 rebounds, and a block. I've been on cock for a couple of years now. He's a guy that if he's going to play, there is going to be significant fantasy value from him. The problem is he can just never find himself in a role where he's going to play big minutes. And that's going to limit him. So you leave him for deeper leagues, or unless something happens to Robin Lopez, an injury strike, then they whip out their cock and really start playing him big minutes, then you'll have some fantasy value. Now, Lopez struggled. He had 25 minutes only, 4.7 rebounds, still had the 3 blocks. So not a bad line, even in those limited minutes. But the 4 points is not something that you love. On the Pacers side of things, Monte Ellis, only 8 points, but efficiently, only took him 6 shots. 8 boards, 7 assists, 2 steals, 2 threes, and 1 block is a very, very full line for Monte. Paul George, typically poor field goal percentage, 10 of 23, but 27, 7, and 6 is nice. And George Hill bounced back from his pathetic shooting night the other night where he went 0 of 7. He was 5 of 8 here for 10 points with a couple of steals. Miles Turner, the subject of our Instagram question of the day, he went for 24 and 6. He had a steal in 30 minutes. And Jan Mihimi, the guy who'd been exploding lately, he still played 31 minutes. Not quite as productive, but still 8 of 7 with a block and 4 of 5 shooting. So still big numbers from Mihimi, and he still has to be owned. The bench, there's not much to really love there. I like that Joe Young's getting 15 minutes and playing decently. 8 points with 3 assists. He's a 20-team league guy and a dynasty player. But otherwise, Lavoie Allen, Jordan Hill, Solomon Hill, you have to be pretty deep to really consider them. There was no CJ Miles yet again with that calf issue. He takes a long time to heal. The Charlotte Hornets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Hornets didn't get the victory. which I'm sure they would have loved. I think they'd won five straight before this one, but Kemba Walker was still pretty good. 20 points with six dimes, three triples and one steal on efficient shooting, which has been more of a hallmark for him this year. Nick Batum, it doesn't look great, but a triple one with 9 points, five rebounds and six assists is still very, very solid numbers. And it's what confuses people with a lot of situations that, yeah, looking at that and thinking, oh, that's a bad night. But 9, 5, and 6 with a steal, a three and a block is still a really good performance. Marvin Williams played 25 minutes and went 9 of 10, and Frank Kaminsky blew up for 16 points, including three triples in 23 minutes. I don't think there's much standard league appeal for him, especially with Al Jefferson and Cody Zeller both still there. Now, Zeller only played 23 minutes here, 7 and 6, and Al Jefferson played 21, going 12 and 6. This looks like it's going to be a timeshare for most of the season. It's going to mean Zeller is hard to own in 12-team leagues, and Jefferson is still hard to own for me. If you own him, he's probably the worst player on your bench, to be honest. Maybe he gets better. But I think that with Zeller there, with Kaminsky there, with Spencer Hawes there as well, I don't think that Jefferson's going to come out and play big minutes. Your 12-6 is okay, but no other stats, poor free throw shooting, and a real capped upside because of those other guys around him. He's not someone that I'm, you know, talked about it plenty of times. He's not someone that I'm holding on to all that often. Courtney Lee, 30 minutes. This is what I think is the norm going to be for him. 8 and 5 with a steal and a block. It's still more of a 14-team league sort of guy, though. I don't think we really need to be bothered in 12-team formats. Jeremy Lin, he went back to 25, and again, I think that's more of the range for him. He lost 5 minutes. Courtney Lee gained 5 minutes. I think that will happen more often. 10 points with 4 assists for Lin. He falls more into a deep 12, 14-team league sort of discussion. Jorge Gutierrez, he's our Hornets debut, and he played 4 minutes for 4 points. That's pretty cool if you're a big Jorge Gutierrez fan. On the Cavs, LeBron only played 30 minutes, but still was productive. 23, 7-7, 2 steals and 2 triples. While J.R. Smith, he had a very nice all-round line. 16-5-2, 3 steals and 2 threes. And he does have the ability to do that. He's not Nick Young. He's not a player who shoots and does nothing else. He can rebound. He can get steals. He can get assists. And I think he should be owned in most 12-team leagues. Kyrie, 23-6-5 with a triple one. Really great shooting from him as well. And the situation that I really wanted to see is what's happening in the front court. Tristan Thompson, that's 2 games since Channing Frye's been there. Minutes in the low 20s. 23 here for Thompson, 6 and 10. And Channing Frye played 18 minutes and went 15 and 6 with 4 triples. That's 2 games. That's enough for me to decide it's a pattern. Thompson still had his 10 rebounds, but it's going to be hard for him to get 10 rebounds in 22 minutes a game. If you own him in 12-team leagues, I reckon you can probably do better. He wasn't a must-own guy anyway, even in 32 minutes, but at 22 or 23, no chance. Tim Mozgov played 25 minutes as well. He went 6 and 9 with a steal. He's only a deep league consideration player. And Matthew Dellavedova starting to get more minutes at the 2. 10 points with 7 assists, 3 triples and a steal. But I think when Iman Shumpert comes back, Dally will lose some of those 2 guard minutes in deference to what Shumpert can bring. Not much else, I think, really. Oh, Kevin Love was terrible. 8-2-2 with 2 steals in his 26 minutes on some really poor shooting. But I don't imagine he's not going to be that bad moving forward. The Minnesota Timberwolves, my favorite team to talk about. Tayshaun Prince, of course, he was back in the starting lineup. Awesome stuff. 17 minutes for Prince, 5 points and 5 rebounds. He actually hit a 3 and hit all of his shots. So, hey, there you go. Maybe it worked. It didn't. But the good thing about that is that it didn't affect Gorgui Dieng's minutes. It didn't affect Zach LaVine's minutes. Now, it affects Zach LaVine's role, but it didn't affect his minutes. LaVine's going to be back starting the next game in what surely has to be the stupidest rotation in the history of in the NBA, but it didn't affect him, so that was fine. Dieng played 41 minutes in foul trouble, which was great. 21-8, a steal and 2 blocks. Karl-Anthony Towns went 16-6, not his greatest performance, but still, you know, 16-6 is okay when it's a down night. And Rick Rubio went 12-3-12 with 2 steals and 2 threes. Andy Wiggins, 26 points. Not bad shooting when you talk 9 of 19, that's okay. But 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a couple of threes, that's a nice conversion there. Hit both of his attempts. And he's still going to be that back end sort of player, I think. Now, LaVine did struggle. He went 3 of 10. Had 7 points, but chipped in with 4 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, and a 3, and should be owned in 12-team leagues. If he's not, make sure he is. Loving that I'm seeing Tyus Jones play here. 12 minutes, 4 points and 3 assists. He is a real dynasty guy to get. If you're out of the playoffs and you've got some dead old weight on your roster, and you're looking to build for, say, 2 years' time, I think that Tyus Jones is going to be a decent NBA player. in 2 years' time. Your league has to be pretty deep, but I do like what Jones has shown this year, and I think that he can grow significantly. Not in height-wise, in skills. For the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, 38 minutes, 31 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals and 2 threes. Really complete game from DeRozan. Lowry, 21 points with 6 dimes and 3 triples was good as well. And interestingly, we saw Bismack Biyombo play 29 minutes, which on the surface you go, come on, Dwayne, what are you doing? But Jonas Valanciunas was in very early foul trouble. He only played 19 minutes and went 14-7, so Biyombo had to play. I'm not concerned about Valanciunas being limited to 19 minutes moving forward. He'll be back to his 27, 28, hopefully 30 minutes, and Biyombo will go back down to 19. Now, Biyombo was good, 11 boards and 3 blocks, but it's very unpredictable when he's going to do that. Corey Joseph has been really in a nice run, 18 points with 6 assists and 2 rebounds in those 22 minutes. I don't like that the minutes have dropped back a little bit because he's not going to shoot 6 of 8 very often, but still a really nice line, and he's a sort of a worst player on your bench guy for 12-team leagues. Terrence Ross lasted 19 minutes before getting ejected. He had 9 points, all from 3. He's of no use for standard leagues, and Patrick Patterson continues to get big minutes and not do much with him. 35 minutes for him here, 7-6 with a couple of blocks and a 3-pointer, while Luis Scola can't get out of the 20s. 6 points in 13 minutes for Scola. Any hope of him in a 12-team league or even a 14-team league at the moment for Scola is pretty much dashed. James Johnson started, had 2 points in 19 minutes, and he is a starter in name only. The Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat. Klay helped Steph out in the victory, 33-3, 4 triples, 4 steals on an even more efficient 13 of 25 shooting, and Draymond Green had 10-11 with a block. Not Draymond's greatest night by any stretch, but still okay production. Harry Barnes, only 28 minutes for Barnes, 11 points with 5 rebounds and 2 threes. Had an assist, had a steal, but you know my thoughts on him by now. I just can't see it for him. I just don't see him being... Look, he's all right. His numbers, they come out okay. Over the last week, he's 121st. Over the last month, he's 148th. Over the last 2 months, he's 160th. That's not what I want on my 12-team roster. It's okay, sort of. But I just don't want that sort of production. It's not good enough. If you stream in 3 guys worse than him over the course of the week, you'll get better numbers than him. You get 5 or 6 games out of them. It's much better use of his spot. I don't see him getting any better unless Harry Barnes goes down, or unless Klay Thompson goes down, or unless Draymond Green goes down, and then he'll get a much bigger role. But for now, he's stuck, and I think he should be on waiver wires in basically all standard leagues. Andre Iguodala played 28 minutes and had 7 points, and Andy Bogut played 30 minutes, 2 points with 9 rebounds and 3 assists. That's going to have an impact on what happens in the Magic game for Thursday, so make sure we're checking that one out. Andy Varejão, in his first game for the Warriors, played 10 minutes off the bench and had 1 point. His fantasy appeal is 0, but interesting to see that they did play him 10 minutes. On the Heat, Hassan Whiteside played 32 off the bench again. Not sure why they're persisting with Amari Stoudemire, who started and played 6 minutes. Whiteside went 21-13 with a steal and 2 blocks and hit all 5 of his free throws and went 8-11 from the field. So he was really in contention for the monstrous line of the night as well. Dwayne Wade, 11-20 shooting, 32 points with 7 assists, a steal and a block, one of his better games in the last couple of weeks. And Justice Winslow, he really needs to be talked about here. 33 minutes for Winslow, 8 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals and 2 blocks. I mentioned it, I don't even know when, last episode or a couple of shows before, that he's turning his above average, good, great defense into great statistical defense. And it's coming up here. A combined 5 steals and blocks is awesome. Plus the elite rebounding you're getting from him. Plus his field goal percentage is way up. He was 4 of 7 in this one. He has to be owned in 12-team leagues, I think. In the last month, he's averaging just 8.8 points, but 7.3 rebounds is a big number. 1.5 steals is beautiful. Half a block is all right, and I think that's got scope to improve. But 54% and 80 from the line. These are impressive numbers. And again, it doesn't fit everyone, but the big rebounding, the elite steals, the good field goal percentage, the improved free throws, the ability for him to block some shots, he's really coming into his own at the moment, Justice Winslow. Josh Richardson, another guy, speaking like Tyus Jones before, I love Richardson for long-term dynasty value. He played 29 minutes here and had 15 points with 3 triples and a steal and a block. I think he can be a real contributor. And when I say real contributor, I think that at some point in the next 4 years, he can be a top 175 player, a top 150 player, which doesn't suit everyone. But if you're in a dynasty league that's deep, there's appeal there. Luol Deng, another double-double. He had a triple one as well, going 16 and 11 with three assists. A big night there. And Goran Dragic had his seven assists, but 5 of 17 shooting sort of dampened his night. Still 13 points with a steal and a three is nice production. Josh McRoberts had that massive, massive game with Chris Bosh out. Hasn't recreated it since. He only played 14 minutes. There's no point in holding on to him in 12-team leagues. Same with Gerald Green, who did not take a single shot in 25 minutes. They're better just running Josh Richardson out in his role and playing Richardson 30 minutes and Green can get limited. They're going to have to continue to play Green, though, because of the injuries to Beno Udrih and Tyler Johnson, but he has just been woefully bad this season. Yeah, obviously, a lot of personal issues for him earlier on in the year, and I wouldn't be shocked if that's carrying over into some of his form at the moment. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Detroit Pistons, this game was a blowout very early on. Hollis Thompson was quite impressive. Played 32 minutes and had 19 points with three triples. He does get on hot streaks, and then he drops off completely, so I'm not buying into it too much. And honestly, the rest of the Sixers, you know, box score, it looks terrible. No one played over 30 minutes. The most anyone played was 26 minutes for Ish Smith. Nerlens Noel had 3 points combined with five steals and blocks, you know, combined. Okafor had 13 points and not much else. Kendall Marshall had 12 points in 22 minutes. Overall, I'm just going to write this game off from the Sixers, and you're not going to be able to get any sort of, you know, great value from it. Everyone stunk. Covington, Ish Smith, Okafor, Noel, all these guys were really terrible. On the Pistons side of things, Stan Van Gundy was able to limit the minutes of many of his players because of the blowout nature, but I still love what I'm seeing from Toby Harris. 22-8 with 2 assists in 30 minutes. Reggie Jackson went 17-3-5 with 2 steals, and Marcus Morris went 13-4-8 with 3 steals and 2 triples. Do not think that is the new Marcus Morris. He is still a very, very much the worst player on your 12-team league roster. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 11 points and not much else, and Andre Drummond went 12-18. The big surprise here is Reggie Bullock playing 26 minutes and having 16 points with 3 triples. It was a blowout, so he got extra run, but interesting to see him produce because he's one of those Clipper wings that never played, and now he's in Detroit. And he's played a little bit more, but really not a huge amount, and I don't have massive hope for him being a fantasy guy at any stage really throughout his career. So again, this whole game, looking at the box score, there's not a huge amount to be gained from it, I don't think. The Washington Wizards and the Chicago Bulls. Nene stuffed the stat sheet. 6 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks in 21 minutes. He played more than Jared Dudley in this one, so that's interesting. But it doesn't mean that we need to go and add Nene in our 12-team formats. He's probably a borderline 14-team league guy, to be honest. Dudley, only 20 minutes, 5-4 with 2 steals and a 3. I talked about the coming reduction in his playing time, and it obviously happened here. And I think it will continue to, you know, maybe not stay at under 20 minutes a game, but I think it will continue to be low 20s, and that's not going to be enough for 12-team leagues. Now, Markieff Morris, up to 28 minutes. That's getting interesting. 5 points off 1 of 7 shooting. But 10 boards, 1 steal, 1 block is nice production. The problem with Morris is, now lots of people are going to be ready to drop him. I'm not dropping Markieff Morris because what we're seeing is minutes increasing. What we're seeing is production being okay. 1.3 steals, 0.8 blocks, 4.5 rebounds in 23 minutes in his last 4 games. It's okay. But he's shooting 27% from the field. That won't continue. He'll get that up to 40, to 42, to 43. He shot 47 last year. If he does that, we're talking about a guy that's at 14, 15 points. Yeah, 5 or 6 boards, a steal, a block, very valuable. You just got to have a bit of patience. If you're in do or die mode and like, oh my God, I need to win this week to get into the playoffs, then maybe you consider dropping him. I own him in, I don't know, 3 or 4 leagues, and I'm still holding him because it's about looking at what the trends are doing. His minutes are going up, and it's just a case of shots not falling. But he is doing the other things. He is rebounding. He is playing defense. He is passing. He is doing all the things that he needs to do. The shots just aren't falling. So that's where I look at it and go, okay, he's not being buried on the bench. He's not doing nothing. He's not trying. He's not getting ejected. He's just shot isn't falling. And I think that'll come back to him. So I'm still bullish on him. Brad Beal played off the bench, and in the second night of a back-to-back played 19 minutes because Randy Whitman, 19 points for Beal with 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Not his most efficient shooting night, to be sure, but hopefully we'll see him getting that 32 minutes on most nights moving forward from now. Marcin Gortat struggled, 8-8 with a block, not his best night, and he had a real great opportunity going up against the Bulls. We finally saw the season debut of Allen Anderson. He played 16 minutes and had 9 points with 2 triples. The thing that that did is it limited Otto Porter to just 17 minutes, who had 2 points and 2 rebounds. Is this a sign of things to come? Much like the Cleveland situation with Tristan Thompson and Channing Frye, I want to see what happens in the next game, but Porter has been really bad lately. If there's someone out there that you want to add, I don't think that you should feel terrible for cutting Porter, to be honest, because he's in a real slump, and we talk about not panicking at the start of the season, and even not panicking at this point of the season, but you don't have as long a leeway to hold on to guys. In the last 2 weeks, he's almost at number 150, he's 147. 8 points in 29 minutes. It's not good. He just isn't as involved. His shots are down. He's not getting as many rebounds. He's not getting as many steals. He's not passing the ball. He's at 0.8 assists in the last 2 weeks. Very hard to continue holding Otto Porter. And with Allen Anderson returning into that mix, they're going to have another option on the wing, which they've lacked all season. And that was without Gary Neal as well. Now, Neal can play some minutes. Sessions got 16 points in 18 minutes. These guys aren't awesome options, but Porter's also not playing awesomely. On the Bulls, Derrick Rose, a late-minute scratch. Last-minute scratch? Late scratch? One of those two. He is dealing with knee tendonitis and a hamstring issue, and he just said it just didn't feel right to him. At the knee tendonitis is it's at the back of his knee. It connects to his hamstring. It's all interconnected. Didn't feel right, and he took himself out and said, no, I'm not playing. So the Bulls started this starting lineup of Etuan Moore, Tony Snell, Mike Dunleavy, Taj Gibson, and Pau Gasol. What a horrific starting lineup. 4 of the starters from the start of the year are out for the Bulls. Rose, Butler, Mirotic, and Joakim Noah. Only Pau Gasol's there, and Pau Gasol was sick as. He played 32 minutes. Gasol went 10, 15, and 9, so a manful performance from Gasol, but obviously under the weather. Taj Gibson, 30 minutes, 17, 7, and 7 with 2 steals. And with Gibson and Gasol both playing well, Bobby Porter struggled. 5-7 in 20 minutes for Bob. I still don't really think that he's a must-hold 12-team league guy. You could have owned him, but he's the worst guy on your bench. So to me, he's expendable. Etuan Moore has value in some 12-team formats, but more of a 14-team league guy. 17 points, 3 rebounds, 2 steals, and a triple. And Mike Dunleavy up to 28 minutes, so he's getting back into the swing of things. 14-4 with 2 triples and a block. He's, again, more of a 14-team league player. What about Tony Snell, my man? 16-4-3 with 4 triples. That'll be probably the cumulative total of his next 5 games. He'll get close to that. Do not buy into Tony Snell. And Dougie McDermott had 14-5 in his 29 minutes. We also saw the Bulls' debut of Justin Holiday, who had 3 points in 7 minutes, but that's likely just due to the fact that that Derrick Rose was out. The Lakers and the Grizzlies. Lou Williams played 23 minutes off the bench. 22 points with 4 triples. That's really nice, but I like the fact that he only played 23 minutes. I can get behind that, Byron. That's the way you should do it. Clarkson played 41 minutes. D'Angelo Russell played 33. Williams played 23. Let me get my numbers right. 23 for Williams. And that's fine. He was really good. Got to the line 6 times. Had 22 points and 4 triples. These are all good numbers. Probably not a 12-team league guy. He can be owned under certain circumstances, but his value drops off when he goes from 32 to 22 minutes. And I don't think he'll stay at 22. I think he'll be at 25, 26 minute a game guy. Brandon Bass continues to produce in limited run. 11-6 with a steal and a block on very efficient numbers. Maybe. I'll add him for the short term because he's going through this stretch of getting a lot of steals and blocks, and it's not something that he's usually done throughout his career. On to D'Angelo Russell. He looked really good. 22 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, and 3 triples in 33 minutes. Let's hope this is more of the norm from him moving forward. And his young partner in crime, Julius Randle, 33 minutes, 11-14, no other stats, and poor percentages. This is who Julius Randle is. He won't have zeros across the board. He won't be 50% or less in both percentages all that often, but it's definitely something that happens more with him than other players. This is just who he is. I don't love Randle. I don't think that he's a star. I don't think he's got star potential or anything like that. I don't think he's got fantasy star potential either. He should be owned now in most 12-team leagues, but I wouldn't be afraid to drop him if I'm sitting fine in rebounds. If I'm terrible at rebounds or I'm comfortably winning them, then he holds no value, really. Then he can move on, because that's really all he's giving you at this point. Larry Nance, who they were considering shutting down for the rest of the season, played 15 minutes, had 3-3 with a steal. You feel that if they're talking about shutting him down, then he probably will miss some time with that knee problem. And Roy Hibbert, only 16 minutes, had 4 fouls there, so that limited him from his usual 21 or 22. 1 point with 2 steals and 2 blocks. We know that by now, Roy shouldn't be owned in any 12-team leagues. Kobe Bryant, only 29 minutes, and this is going to be the pattern for him, it looks like, moving forward. Less than 30 minutes on most nights now. And I still think that you should own him if you're punting field goal percentage, but if you're not, then I reckon you'd be relatively safe in moving on from him for a different guy. On the Grizzlies, Mike Conley didn't play many minutes, but didn't have to. 24, 6, and 8 in 29 minutes with a couple of triples. And PJ Hairston had probably his best game of the season. 17 points in 23 minutes, 4 triples, 2 assists, and a steal. I don't think there's anything to get excited about with Hairston. We've seen it a lot this season of him playing in these minutes in the 15, 16, 18 range and not doing anything. He got a couple of extra minutes here and he got some extra shots with Tony Allen out. Now, Allen was okay to play, but they left him on the bench. Not that they benched him, he just didn't play because they didn't need him to and he was still recovering from that injury. I'm not buying into Hairston. You have to be probably 16 to 18 team leagues to really get into him. Vince Carter had 9 points, as I touched on before, and a triple one, so that's some decent numbers. And he's a guy that I look at. I'd probably look at Carter over PJ Hairston, to be honest, in those deeper leagues. Jermichael Green, he's had a couple of decent nights, 12 and 9 with a steal and a 3, but I doubt that he's going to be a 12-team league guy. And we saw the best Brandon Wright that we've seen this season, 15 and 6, 2 blocks, and 7 of 10 shooting. His minutes are going to continue to go up, and he probably should be owned and stashed in 12-team leagues, but I think if you're battling for the playoffs this week, and they've got another game against the Lakers, so that's going to inflate his stats this week. But I'm not convinced that he plays 25 or 26 minutes in the next 2 weeks. Zach Randolph, 14-9 in his 29 minutes. He saw Julius Randle doing it, so he thought, I've got to show him how the master does it. 14-9 with poor percentages. And Mario Chalmers only got 18 minutes here, had 6 assists, but interesting that he's not getting those mid-20 minutes at the moment, because Lance Stevenson played 23, PJ Hairston got 23 as well. So maybe the likelihood of Chalmers playing a lot next to Conley is looks limited at the moment. Now, Stevenson had 8 points in his 23 minutes. He needs to be in that PJ Hairston realm of league depth before he can be considered. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. KD went 24-8 and 6, and Russ Westbrook went 24-7 and 13. Big lines from those guys. They both shot an identical 8 of 17 from the field and 6 of 6 from the free throw line. We saw the best Dion Waiters we've seen in a while as well. He went back to the bench with Andre Robertson starting. 27 minutes for Waiters, 4-2 and 3 with 4 triples and a steal. His value probably doesn't change much. He will play less minutes, but he'll also probably be a little bit more productive playing with the second unit, and that'll even itself out and make him a deeper league sort of player. Enes Kanter had one of his big games in limited minutes, 14-9 with 2 steals, but hard to trust him in standard formats, and 15-7 for Steve Adams in his 25 minutes and 2 blocks. He is more of a specialist guy that you add if you're looking for some rebounds and blocks in a punt free throw type of build. He can be owned in 12s, but really not in any other situation for 12-team leagues there. Randy Foy played 22 minutes here. Kyle Singler played just 5. Campaign played just 5. Interesting that they're giving Foy those extra minutes. I hope that doesn't continue. I want Payne to continue to get run, but he's forced Singler down, he's forced Morrow down, and one game here of forcing Payne down. Foy is not going to be approaching 12-team value, but I think you obviously have to look at him in a 16-team league, and that's probably where he sits at the moment. Andre Robertson, even though he's starting, it doesn't mean anything. On the Mavericks, Dirk, 33-6 with 2 triples and 2 steals. Insane efficiency, going 10 of 16 from the field and hitting 11 of his 12 free throws. And Darren Williams, 14-3-6 against Russ Westbrook. Big nights from those guys. Salah Mejri with the block party. 2 points, but 6 boards and 4 blocks in 9 minutes. If he gets 30 minutes, I love what he can do. It's a long way for him to do that. We saw David Lee's Mavericks debut. He played 15 minutes, 4 points and 4 rebounds. Yeah, he might get up to 18 or 19 minutes, that sort of range, but 12-team leagues, I think you're dreaming if you think he's going to contribute. Chandler Parsons was terrible, 6-3-3, but it was foul trouble related. He had 5 fouls in his 24 minutes, so don't get too worried there. And Wes Matthews had a decent output, 15-2-2 with 5 triples. It came on 5 of 16 shooting, so not very efficient, but at least he's taking the shots, and at least he's hitting some of them. And that's more that we could say from him over the last, say, month or two before that. Ray Felton went 10-6-9 in his 33 minutes. JJ Barea was really limited. He only played 12, and Devin Harris played 14, and Felton was the preferred backup at the 1 and the 2. The next game, the Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Clippers. Ken Fareed only played 23 minutes, but was a big 23 minutes. 21-11 with 1 steal. I don't imagine that happens in 23 minutes very often. I think the likelihood of him getting 23 minutes far exceeds the likelihood of him putting up 21-11 in 23 minutes. Gaz Harris bounced back after a bad game, 17-5, 3 triples, 3 steals, 1 assist. Not the most appealing player to most, but I do really like him. I think that he can be a fantasy contributor, and he's a real-life, pretty good player. He's a top 100 guy over the last 2 months at only 12 points a game because he's getting steals, solid assists, nice threes, really good percentages as well. So in a roto league, I really do like him for 12-team leagues and for certain head-to-head builds as well. Nikola Jokic, he got 26 minutes and only scored 7 points, but he still, even when he gets limited like that and shoots 3 of 9, 11 boards, 3 assists, and a triple one, still contributing in many areas. Yusuf Nurkic, DNP CD, and Jameer Nelson still bothered by that wrist. He didn't play. Joffrey Lavernia got the extra minutes with Nurkic out, 12-6 for him, but it's not reliable with him. And Will Barton went 4-6 with 2 steals and a block in 26 minutes. His minutes will be up and down. There's no doubt about that. Danilo Gallinari, 16-8. Yeah, that's an okay line from him. And Emmanuel Mudiay was brutal. 4 points on 1 of 12 shooting. But if you own Emmanuel Mudiay, I'm pretty sure that you're aware that he's going to hurt your percentages. He actually hit both of his free throws and had 0 turnovers, which is something that he has improved a lot lately, the turnovers part. But that field goal percentage, that's a brutal blow to take. Over the last month, he's at 2.6 turnovers a game. That's pretty good. Yeah, 3.4 is what he's averaging for the season, so he's fixing it up in that area. And the problem is that he's a sub 35% shooter on the season and sub 65 from the free throw line. So he's hurting you in both of those areas. There's still 5 rebounds, 6 assists, helping in those counting stats. DJ Augustine only got 18 minutes in this one. He's going to be that 18-22 sort of guy, I would say. I talked about yesterday, maybe considering for 12-team leagues. Maybe, but there's going to be nights like this, and there's going to be nights where he goes for 15-6. That'll happen. On the Clippers, Chrissy Paul, 17-6-10, 4 steals and 3 threes, and DeAndre Jordan had 12 boards with his 4 blocks. Both Jamal Crawford and JJ Redick had 20 points and combined for 9 triples, 6 for Redick and 3 for Crawford. So the main 4 guys in this team were the main 4 contributors. Jeff Green played 26 minutes, more than Wes Johnson, who played 23, but neither was very effective. Wes Johnson had 2 steals, Jeff Green had 3 blocks. If you're owning Jeff Green, say you own Jeff Green and Markieff Morris, I'm dropping Green before Morris, definitely. But Green is not a must-drop guy. Again, it always depends. Who am I adding? Which guys are on my waiver wire that I'm adding if I'm looking to drop Jeff Green? I don't know if... I thought Green would get up to 28 minutes. I thought he'd be there by now. I'd give him one more game and see what that shows. But so far, it looks like Doc's going to use that combination of him, Johnson, Pierce, Marmute as the 3 and 4, which is just such a terrible group of players. Cole Aldrich, again, producing in limited time. 11 minutes, 2 points, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, and 1 block. Always just like to highlight him because if DeAndre Jordan goes down, you know exactly where you're running to the waiver wire. The last game of the night, the Sacramento Kings and the San Antonio Spurs. Danny Green was beautiful. 16-7, 4 triples, 3 steals, 1 block. This is exactly what owners were hoping for Danny Green at the start of the season. He took him a bloody long time to deliver, and he should have been dropped in pretty much all leagues. He wasn't. But then you should have grabbed him, and he absolutely has to be owned now. He's a top 70 player over the last month. He's averaging 2.2 triples, 1.4 steals, 0.8 blocks. He's trying to get back to being that triple one guy. He's almost a triple one guy on the season, 1.6, 0.9, and 0.8. The problem is he's at 39% from the field on the season, 47 over the last month. His shot is falling. He's hit 44% of his threes. He has to be owned everywhere. Now he is getting back to being the Danny Green that we were expecting to see at the start of the season. Kawhi Leonard returned from his calf issue. He started and went 18-8 with 4 steals and a block and 2 triples in 28 minutes. And that's an inefficient night from Kawhi, shooting 5 of 16, but still nice production. The most interesting part of this to me is that Kawhi Leonard returned and Kyle Anderson still played 29 minutes. Slow-mo went for 14-8-3 and had 2 steals on 7 of 8 shooting. Has he worked himself into a sizable rotation role? If you're in a 16-team league, I think you should just make an ad and just see what happens here. Especially with the Spurs playing a back-to-back and playing on Thursday, you might get another 25 minutes out of Kyle Anderson. He's got a very diverse fantasy game, and he can contribute in many categories. I really am interested to see what they do with him moving forward. Patty Mills only played 19 minutes, 7 points with 3 assists. Marcus Aldridge went 7-9. He had 5 blocks, but he shot 2 of 11 from the field, so not an overall good night there. And Tony Parker was really good. He was 23-3-6 on 11 of 17 shooting. So a good night from Parker, but as we'll talk about in the DFS preview section, they are the Spurs play again and against the Orlando Magic, so we could see some interesting things go down. With the Kings, Rajon Rondo, 7 points, but 18 dimes, 8 rebounds, and 3 steals. A good night from him. Boogie Cousins went 22-10 with a couple of triples, and Darren Collison continues his streak. He's playing 30 minutes a night, basically. They're preferring him as the shooting guard, which they should have all season. 15-3-6 for Collison, and really has to be owned in 12-team leagues at the moment. Quincy Acey exploded for 15 points with 2 steals. You can ignore that. And Willie Cauley-Stein was productive in limited minutes, 12-6 with a couple of steals in his 18. Rudy Gay went 11-5 with 3 steals. And back to Cauley-Stein, it's really hard to own him in 12-team leagues. Ben McLemore, no. And Marco Bellinelli, 15 minutes for no stats whatsoever. That is it for the recap of Wednesday's games. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to preview Thursday's 5 games from a DFS perspective.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see.
Games on Thursday, so let's get stuck right into those. The first one is the Golden State Warriors and the Orlando Magic. I made a mistake before. I said the Spurs were playing the Magic. They're not. The Spurs are playing the Jazz. The Warriors are playing the Magic. The Warriors are favored by 8 points, and the total is 222 points here. Injury-wise, there's nothing to really talk about. Thank you, basketball gods. Festus Ezeli is out, but we already knew that. Now, at point guard, we'll start with Steph. He's at 10,800. His lowest score in his last 5 has been 43. He dropped 60 today. He's averaging 54 across the last 3. There's a blowout risk here. I don't think I want to use Steph in cash, because what if he plays 31 minutes? Yes, he'd probably still have 40 points, but at $11,000 or $10,800, is that where you need it to be? It's not. So I'd be a little bit cautious about using Steph, especially on a slate like this. There is so many cheap point guard options that are worthwhile with great opportunities. So Steph, yes, you're probably going to get 40 points out of him, but is it a worthwhile spend of $11,000? That's the debate, and I'm not sure that it is in this one, when it could be a blowout, or and Steph has limited minutes. That could happen. Brandon Jennings at 3,800. He was terrible in the last game, but this is a great matchup. Point guards do pretty well against Steph Curry and the Warriors. At 3,800, you could throw him into a tournament and maybe he drops 21. He's had a 26-point game in the last five, and that's worth looking at. Now, Lord Alfred Payton at 5,300, the matchup's great for him too, but just don't trust what he's been able to do with the way Skiles has been playing with his minutes. At shooting guard, let's look at Victor Oladipo. He's at 6,900. He's been playing huge minutes and big production from him recently, averaging over 40 points in his last three games. The thing I am concerned about is that all this season, when the Magic get blown out or when they're doing the blowing out, Skiles takes about 4 or 5 minutes off his starters. So instead of playing them 36, 37 minutes, they'll play 30. They'll play 31. They'll play 29. And that worries me a bit here. Now, you could say, okay, the Warriors, they're on a second game of a back-to-back, and they're on the road, so maybe it won't be a blowout. So I'm a bit more confident in using Oladipo in that situation, but just be aware of that risk. Klay Thompson at 7,200 has been smashing teams, averaging 40 across his last five, 45 across his last three, you know, almost one of the better plays of the day. And Evan Fournier falls into the same category as Oladipo. He's only at 5,500. He's basically been a 30-point guy every game over the last week or 2 weeks or so. He's averaging 31 across his last five. His lowest score has been 27, and if he gets his lowest score, that's easily 5x value. He is one of the better shooting guard plays on the board as well. At small forward, Harry Barnes, you know my distaste for his fantasy game. He's at 4,500. It's a good matchup for him, but I don't see the upside. In a tournament, I wouldn't do it, and I don't trust him in a cash game. So, no thanks. Mario Hezonja and Andre Iguodala, they're both in the same boat. At power forward, Aaron Gordon's at 6,200. Don't hate that salary. He's basically right on average there for the last five games, average at 32. His lowest score in his last five has been 30. The Warriors and Draymond Green might trouble him a little bit, but I think that he's got definite 30-point potential here. Draymond at 8,400, he is strictly a tournament option. I can't rely upon him in cash. Only 26 today, which at 8,400 would have hurt a lot. He's just, yes, he can put up big games, definitely. But I don't know. At 8,400, I'm not loving it, to be honest. Jason Smith, Ersan Ilyasova, Andrew Nicholson, there's no value in any of those guys. And on the Warriors side of things, Maurice Spates and Kevon Looney, they don't really move the needle either. At center, Andrew Bogut. Is he going to play 30 minutes again? I think that's pretty unlikely in a second half of a back-to-back. I think with Andy Varejao there, they'll play some Draymond Green at center. Maurice Spates will get some run. So I think that we're going to see Bogut back down in his 24-22-minute range, and that means that we're not using him for DFS. But on the other side of things, Nick Vucevic at 85. The same caveats apply as with Victor Oladipo. There could be a blowout, but it's a great matchup for him here against the Warriors. High-paced game. He's a 45 average across his last five. The salary is steep, but he's one of the better center options on the board for me. The next game up is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 8.5, and the total here is 217.5 points. Isaiah Thomas is currently listed as probable. He's dealing with some wrist soreness. It doesn't look like it's going to bother him. Or it might bother him. It doesn't look like it's going to stop him playing. On the Milwaukee side, Jared Bayless and John Henson are both questionable. I would be flummoxed if they played. I don't think flummoxed is the right word there. I would be shocked. I would be amazed if they both played. So we're going to talk about some value here. At the moment, we've got them questionable, so they're factoring into our projections. But you know, I think we'll find out pretty early in the day that they both don't play. Marcus Smart's at 5,400. He's been great lately. I'm okay with using him, even though the Bucks are pretty good against point guards. There is a bit of risk involved with Smart, but he's been more consistent lately, and he's able to do things that when his shot doesn't fall, he'll hit some threes, he'll get some steals, he'll rebound the ball. He can do it in multiple areas, and that's more of a sign of a guy who's just that little bit safer. Michael Carter-Williams, if Bayless is out at 6,100, you think that 30-plus minutes for him is on the card, so I'd definitely look at using him, but the Celtics, after that little stretch at the start of February, end of January, where they weren't defending point guards well, they're cranking back down on them now. So there is a risk that the Celtics do have an issue with Carter Williams or create an issue for him. So he's not the best play. Isaiah Thomas at 8,200, a similar situation. The Bucks have been good against point guards all season as well. Most of these guys, it's not a great option. At shooting guard, we've got Avery Bradley at 5,600, he's a great tournament play because he's got 35, 36-point upside. At 5,600 in a cash game, I'm not really all that trustworthy of it. Chris Middleton on the other side at 7,500. It's a pretty decent salary, but Middleton carries his team on offense a lot. 35 points for him feels like almost a minimum. His minimum score in his last five is actually 31, so he's not far off. And at 7,500, he's a very nice cash game play. Now, OJ Mayo is a guy that I like here. He's at 3,900. He's averaging 22 across his last three in 30-minute average. He played 24 in the last game, but that was foul trouble induced. If Jared Bayless is out, I think Mayo is one of the better options, and I think he works in both cash and in tournaments. He has had a 33-point game over the last five, and at sub 4,000, it's tremendous value. You're talking about 7, 8x type of value, you know, upside there with Mayo, and that's great for a tournament. And 20 points feels like it's, you know, if he gets 25 minutes, he's going to get 20 fantasy points. I'm pretty confident about OJ Mayo for tomorrow. Watch him be absolutely terrible now. With the small forwards, a couple of good value plays here. Jay Crowder at 6,200 has been playing exceptionally well, much better than I anticipated. Myself and Matt Smith were having a chat today. One of Matt's friends who's a listener to the podcast had pointed out that I wasn't a fan of Crowder at the start of the season, and that's true. I wasn't. I didn't think that Crowder was really that good. Yeah, he provided some nice defense, but it didn't turn into great fantasy value. The Celtics didn't really trust him last season. But this year, all of his per 36 numbers have improved, including both percentages, with the exception of rebounds. His scoring's up a heap. His threes are up. His steals are up. His assists are up. His blocks are up. His field goal, three-point, and free throw percentage are all increased. And his minutes have gone up about 5 per game. So a lot more trust heading towards his direction at the moment. So, Jay Crowder, I apologize for saying I didn't think you were very good at the start of the season. You've definitely proved me wrong. Now, he's averaging 33 in the last five. I think he's a great option here. On the other side, Giannis Antetokounmpo is now at 8,100, and that feels a lot, but he is smashing at the moment. He is averaging over 42 points in his last five, 49 points in his last three. Crowder's defense is decent, but it doesn't translate into a big dip in opposition fantasy points, so I'm fine with spending up on Giannis here. 5,700 for Evan Turner. Even Evan Turner, I think, at that price point, is worth a punt. He's averaging 26 in the last five. He's been relatively consistent. He's got a consistent role. He does what he needs to do, and that's almost 25 to 26 points most nights for Turner. At power forward, Jared Sullinger gets to feast on the poor Bucks front court. He's at 6,100. He's averaging 32 or 33 across his last five games. I'm fine with using him. John Henson, I don't think, plays for the Bucks. Jabari Parker has been playing fantastically as well. He's at 5,600. He's averaging 39 across his last three. And the Celtics front court is no great shakes defensively as well. I think that both Sullinger and Parker are in really good spots to put up some big, big numbers in this one. At the center position, not all that keen on using any of these guys, to be honest. Greg Monroe off the bench at 7,800. Yeah, I don't think there's, you know, I think we really need to get too excited there, because when you're on the bench, it just seems like your ceiling is just not, it's not where it needs to be. There's a chance that someone starting gets hot and then you play limited minutes. And that's what happened last game with Miles Plumlee getting hot, and it was a bit of a blowout. But at 7,800, I'm not spending that on Greg Monroe. Tyler Zeller at 3,500. Now, maybe in a tournament, but almost definitely not. But 3,700 for Miles Plumlee, I can sort of get behind that. He's averaging 20.5 across the last three. I wouldn't trust it in cash, but in a tournament, I'm okay with it. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans is the next game. 5.5-point favorites the Thunder are. The total is 222.5 points. Injury-wise, Bryce DeJean-Jones is dealing with a sore wrist. He was probable to play, and Norris Cole is probable with an illness. Now, I was very harsh on Norris Cole in the last game and said finally they'd woken up and not played him. It turns out he was sick and had an IV at halftime, so apologies, Norris. He's still not good, but that's why his minutes were limited. I'm not going to be playing him here. Drew Holiday is the guy I look at 7,700 against Ross Westbrook, which is a boon for fantasy opposition point guards. He's averaging over 40 in his last five games. Yeah, he might get shut down, but I'm pretty confident. His minimum score in his last five is 32. I'm okay with using Drew. 10,900 for Russ. You got a decision. You're going to spend 10,900 on Russ, 10,800 on Steph. Both of them, you feel like there's a chance they get 50 points. And I think that's both, you know, that's, you know, worth it. But the chance that Steph gets sat versus the chance that Russ gets sat, I think it's a much bigger chance that we see Steph having his minutes reduced by 33 or 34. No, not reduced by that. Reduced down from 33, 34 to like 30 or 31. Then Russ going down to say 30 or 32 or something like that. I think that Westbrook feels a bit safer than Steph. And you're spending $100 more. And I think that the ceiling for both guys is relatively similar. Westbrook's lower score in his last five has been 47. That's pretty good. The shooting guards, there is just nothing. Bryce DeJean-Jones, Andre Roberson, Deion Waiters, Randy Foy. Nah, let's pass. The small forwards, KD is here. He is at 10,200. Now, KD has been okay lately, but he hasn't cracked 50 in the last five games. And at 10,200, I want him to do that. And Alonzo G and Dante Cunningham, for as poor as they've been throughout their career and this season, they've been restricting opposition fantasy points. So KD at 10,200, if I'm spending 10,000, it's going in the direction of Westbrook. I prefer Curry over Durant. Now, Durant might be stable and get you 35 or 40 points, but I want more. And yeah, a big game could be coming, but it just doesn't feel it to me. Alonzo G and Kyle Singler are the other two small forwards that are in the discussion there. And by discussion, I mean they're listed on my list of players. At power forward, Ryan Anderson is always strictly a tournament option. There's no cash reliability for him. He will get some extra run with Omer Asik out, though, so factor that in. He had 27 in the last game, and he was a bit better, and that will likely continue. Anthony Davis at 10,200, I'm fine with using him. You know what? He had a stinker in the last game and scored nine points, but that translated to 40.5 FanDuel points. So when he has that bad of a game and scores only 9 points and still puts up 40-plus fantasy points, I think you're a relatively happy guy. Davis is another one of those $10,000 players who I think is tremendous value here. I think, you know, he's in that Westbrook category to me, marginally above Steph and definitely above Durant. Serge Ibaka, I can't trust, even though he's at $5,700. That salary is, you know, appealing, and he's averaging right about 5x value with that. But the upside, I don't know, he's just not doing it for me. But the salary does make it interesting. At center, I don't mind Steve Adams here. He's at 4,400. He dropped 27 today. He's got an average of over 20 across his last five games. And the Pelicans, without Omer Asik in there, it's a real benefit for opposition big men going up against this team. So Adams is a guy that I like. Enes Kanter, you throw into a tournament in case he gets one of those 15-minute double-doubles. And that can clearly happen. The Brooklyn Nets and the Phoenix Suns. The Nets are favored by 1.5 points. That's how bad the Suns are. The Nets are on the road and they're favored by 1.5. The total is 208.5 points. Now, injury-wise, it's all Phoenix. Alex Len suffered an ankle issue in practice. That's a pain. Tyson Chandler will play on Thursday, but we still might not see the full complement of big men in Phoenix to see how the rotation works out. Let's start with the point guards. Phil Pressey, I talked about cheap point guards. Phil Pressey is priced at 3,600. He's played 28 minutes in the last two games for Phoenix. He hasn't produced, you know, great fantasy stats, but at 3,600, if you get 20, 21 points out of him, which he hasn't done yet, but he had 19 in the last one, so he was close to it, he's interesting to look at. Ronnie Price at 3,700. He dropped 27 in the last game. Does he get some run and put up some decent numbers? He's not a horrible punt option in a tournament at that cheap salary. And you know, using that guy as a cheap salary would allow you then to put Davis in, put Westbrook next to him, maybe put Durant in as well if you've got a couple of these cheap guys. Yeah, they're worth looking at. And Donald Sloan at 4,600 takes on the Phoenix Suns backcourt, which is terrible. 4,600. He's averaging 26.5 over his last three. He dropped 28 in the last game. The cash reliability for these guys is very minimal. But in tournaments, there's a lot of cheap guys who are worth looking at. Yeah, and three of them coming in this game. At shooting guard, Devin Booker has been on a real slide. At 4,900, I think his ownership will be pretty low in a tournament, but the Nets is not a difficult matchup, so I'd be okay using him. On the other side, Joe Johnson against the Suns has been playing fantastically, averaging 27.6 over his last three. He gets a tasty matchup here. Don't hate using him at this price point. Normally, I'd look at it and go, that's a bit high for Joe Johnson, but not against the Suns and not when he's playing into some form. Markel Brown, I'd look at as a minimum salary punt in a tournament. He's been playing 20 minutes on most nights. He hasn't got much going, but he can get hot and he can hit some shots and he can grab some rebounds, which is good if your shot doesn't fall. He might do something, but no cash game reliability there. Archie Goodwin is at 5,100. He scored 20 real-life points in the last game and had 20 FanDuel points in 38 minutes. There is no appeal for me for Archie Goodwin, especially if they're just going to restrict him to being the backup behind Devin Booker. Now, Booker only played 24 in the last one due to foul trouble. So if Booker plays 31, 32, where does that leave Goodwin? It leaves him in a spot where I don't want to use him. At small forward, PJ Tucker has been really struggling. He's at 4,400, but I don't put a lot of stock in him. I would maybe look at him in a tournament, but that's probably about it. And the other ones, Bojan Bogdanovic and Sonny Weems, nah, even in the tournaments, they're not happening for me. Mirza Teletovic at 4,200, I like him in both cash and tournaments, averaging 26.5 across his last three. If Len is out, there's going to be some extra minutes for him as probably the backup center behind Tyson Chandler. John Lua, it appears at this point that Earl Watson just doesn't like him as a player. Yes, he's put up some decent stat lines, but there's been a lot of situations where it's been fluky, like he's been terrible. Then in 4 minutes, he'll put up, you know, hit a couple of buckets and block a couple of shots. To me, it's not predictable and it's not consistent enough, so I don't love him. And Chris Humphries, who started the last couple of games, has had his minutes decline in each of the three games he's played in Phoenix, so he is not a guy that I'm looking at. Even though at 3,800, he is he's mildly intriguing as a tournament punt. Thad Young is good for cash, he's good for tournaments, he's got the Suns on deck, he's at 6,700, he's averaging 30 across the last three. There's 35, 36, 40 point upside for him in this matchup against Phoenix. Now Alex Len, we don't know what's going to happen with Len and Chandler. If Len is out, then at 4,500 for Chandler, still doesn't really do it for me. If Len is in, then we don't know how the rotation's going to run, so I avoid them. I avoid them both in both formats at this point. Brook Lopez, on the other hand, is at 8,900. He takes on this Phoenix team, averaging 51 points in his last three games. He's almost at 9,000. That's a big salary, but 45 points is definitely within Brook Lopez's reach. The Houston Rockets and the Portland Trail Blazers the next game. The Blazers are favored by 5 points here. The total is 222.5. So we've got three games on tomorrow with totals in excess of 222. That is massive. For Houston, we don't know if Marcus Thornton is going to be playing after that trade debacle. Value-wise, in this game, Dame Lillard is at 9,500. He has been red hot, but the thing that I think is maybe not, it might surprise you, is that Houston is shutting down opposition point guards to a degree, and Pat Beverly is the reason. They have got a negative ease for point guards, and Lillard at 9,500, it's a big investment. Do you bank on him setting the Blazers' record for most consecutive three-point games? You'd have to think he's a fair chance of it. But is he 9,500 worth? Is he 45 points worth? I think he's a pretty good chance of it, but I am a little bit concerned against Pat Beverly, who's been putting up some pretty nice performances of his own lately. 4,800 for Pat Beverly? I don't love him for DFS, but I look more at the impact that he can have on a guy like Dame Lillard. At shooting guard, I'm not all that concerned about what Houston does to CJ McCollum. He's at 7,600. He's averaging 41 across his last three. I think that another 35 to 40 point performance is definitely on the cards. Not much else, really. And on the Portland side of things, Gerald Henderson, Alan Crabb, they're not guys that I want to look at. Jim Harden is at 10,900. The Blazers have been stopping shooting guards at tremendous rate. Alan Crabb's a big contributor there. CJ McCollum's defense has been helpful. Gerald Henderson's a pretty good defender. Harden's at 10,900, but the matchup doesn't scare me. He's a 54 average across his last three, 54 across his last five, 55 across his last three, a minimum score of 45 across his last five games. It's 10,900 for Harden, but I feel that 50 points is almost the minimum for him. The projections aren't loving him, but I'm a bit more confident in using Harden. At small forward, Al-Farouq Aminu is at 4,700. It doesn't get much easier than playing the Rockets as a small forward. Now, he hasn't been great, but he's been trending upwards in minutes. I would look at him in a tournament and hope that you can go for 25 points from him. Mo Harkless at 4,400. Stunk in the last game. It restricts him to tournaments. We know he can go big. He's had a 40-point game recently. He can go big, but there's no cash reliability there. 6,100 for Trevor Ariza, I'm fine with that. I think that's a nice, solid cash gameplay. I'm fairly confident you get 29 to 33 points out of Ariza if this game was played, you know, 10 times. That's what you'd get on most of the occasions. At power forward, I don't want to touch any of these guys. Ed Davis, Josh Smith, Noah Vonleh, Clint Capella, Terrence Jones, Montrezl Harrell. No thanks to any of them. No, not happening. At center, Mason Plumlee at 5,400. Quietly, he's averaging 29 points across his last three. The minutes have gone up. He's a nice playmaker. He blocks shots. He gets steals. He gets rebounds. I like him at 5,400. I think that he's a nice, solid cash game option. Dwight Howard at 8,000. 8,000 is expensive. He's cracked 40 once in the last five games. An average of 38 is decent. Okay with using Howard, but I probably would rather go. I'd rather spend the extra 500 and get a guy like Nick Vucevic, for example. The San Antonio Spurs and the Utah Jazz, this has got all the makings of a horrible fantasy game. The last time these two teams played, I think the Spurs beat them by about 35 points. It was a nightmare. Shelvin Mack is an interesting one, though, at point guard. He's at 3,700. He played 32 minutes in the last game, only put up 17 points, but I imagine he gets better production in this one. I think that he is another one of those cheap point guard options that can definitely be used. Tony Parker, it's a back-to-back. He played 31 minutes. There's a chance he goes down to 26 or 25. That's going to limit his production, I think. Patty Mills, I might look at Patty Mills at 4,600, throw him into a tournament. If Parker is limited and Mills gets hot, it could be a nice output. Trey Burke and Harold Neto, they are cooked. At shooting guard, Rod Hood is at 6,100. Not a good matchup against the Spurs. I'll leave him alone. 4,500 for Danny Green. You're more than happy to use him. It's not a good matchup against the Jazz, but he's at 4,500. I'm pretty confident that Danny Green is going to deliver close to 25 points. Actually, no, I'll rephrase it. I'm not confident because Danny Green has let us down plenty of times this season. But at 4,500, I'm okay with using him. The small forwards in this one, Gordy Hayward, Kawhi Leonard. Hayward's going to have Leonard on him if he plays. Don't love it. Leonard, it could be a blowout. He could have his minutes limited. Don't love it at 7,700. They're both at 7,700. You know what? And their production recently has been great. Kawhi's averaging 42 over the last three. Hayward's averaging 38 over the last three. Yeah, they're pretty good numbers. But this matchup, the pace of this game is not appealing. Kyle Anderson at 3,600. Throw him into a tournament. He's averaging 22 across his last three. He dropped 29 today. The chances of him having as big a game as he did against the Kings are very, very minimal, but maybe you'd throw him in at that minimum salary. And if he gets 30 points at 3,600, that's in a 7x. It's very important. Power forwards, Tim Duncan, no thanks. Well, he's a center, actually, so yeah, jump the gun there. LaMarcus Aldridge at 7,200. Not against the Jazz. Derek Favors at 7,600 does have intrigue. He's a 42 average across his last three at 7,600. The Spurs, in terms of the reducing numbers against opposition power forwards, has dropped recently. They're a little bit easier to play against. Favors is trending upwards, and his performance has increased each of the last couple of games. Definitely fine with looking at him. And the centers, Rudy Gobert, really struggled in the last one. He's at 7,000. He had 7 points in the last game. The pace of this game is just not going to make me all that excited about using these most of the players from that game. Let's look at the DFS picks for the day. Don Sloan at 4,600. There's a raft of cheap point guard options. Phil Pressey, Ron Price, Shelvin Mack, Brandon Jennings. There's lots of cheap options at point guard. Sloan's probably the guy I feel more comfortable with, more consistent role. Mack's another one who's interesting, but the problem with Mack is that he's taking on the Spurs, and that's a little bit of a concern. Mid-price point guards, I don't like anyone. I don't think there's anyone that's really great in that mid-price. When you get to high-price guys, there's lots of them. Westbrook, Curry, Lillard. But Drew Holiday at 7,700, I reckon, returns probably the best value on that price. At shooting guard, OJ Mayo, 39. Klay Thompson, 72. And CJ McCollum at 76. With the small forwards, El-Farouq Aminu, 47. Jay Crowder, 62. And Giannis Antetokounmpo at 8,100. For the power forwards, Mirza Teletovic, 42. Jared Sullinger, 61. And Anthony Davis, 10,200. And the centers, Steve Adams, 44, Mason Plumlee, 5,400, and Nick Vucevic, 8,500. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Thank you for joining in and listening and watching. If you're watching on YouTube or if you're listening via iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts, thank you. If you can spare 2 minutes, please leave a review. It is greatly helpful. Follow me on all the social media areas, Twitter and Instagram, redrock_bball. Facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Join in the conversations that we have over there. Always some great stuff happening, so I do encourage you to get over there and join in. Of course, basketballmonster.com, heaps of stuff going up there. I'm targeting to get my Dynasty Monster board out as soon as possible. There's a fair bit of work that's going into it, so I apologize on the delay, but it's such a tough thing to do, and I'm going back and forth on so many different things. If you have any Dynasty-specific related questions, please tweet them at me, and I'll answer them before I get that monster board out. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.